We're at the Stone Tree Golf Course. Preparing. We've just initiated the launch sequence for our live, first live webcast ever in honor of the 30th anniversary of the first performance of the Reduced Shakespeare Company. Jess Winfield, Saw Winfield have put together the launch sequence. We're about to go live.
Volume mute. Command tab to producer. Click live cam. Begin talking!
Begin talking!
Begin talking!
Good morning, good afternoon, good evening, whatever it is, wherever you are. Thanks for subscribing, streaming, or downloading and listening to us on your computer or MP3 player. I'm Austin Titchener, one-third of the Reduced Shakespeare Company, and you're listening to this week's Reduced Shakespeare Company podcast, number 245, 30th Anniversary Webcast. August 8, 2011 was the 30th anniversary of the very first performance by the Reduced Shakespeare Company. And through some weird flukes of geography and scheduling, as well as the insistence of RSC founder Daniel Singer and the persistence of founding member Jess Winfield, Daniel, Jess, Jess's wife Saw, Reed Martin, and I all gathered to commemorate this 30-year milestone via a live webcast on Ustream at the Stone Tree Golf Course in Nevada, California, literally yards away from where the RSC's first performance of Hamlet was held in 1981. Now, I say it was a live webcast, but there were some definite dead spots as either the connection went down or Ustream interrupted our webcast with annoying ads. But I did have my trusty iPod and Belkin Toontalk microphone running. So this week we present the audio highlights of our 30th anniversary webcast with hopefully only the dead spots, digressions, and repetitions from previous podcasts removed.
Are we live? We are. Yes, we are live. Ladies and gentlemen, welcome to the Reduced Shakespeare Company's first ever live webcast via Ustream. I'm Austin Titchener, one of the current owners, managing partners of the Reduced Shakespeare Company, joined by Reed Martin, my fellow co-owner of the Reduced Shakespeare Company. And we are honored to have with us today the founding three of the five founding members of the Reduced Shakespeare Company.
We'll get into the numbers later.
This is the sort of stuff that we're going to be talking about.
All right, we'll get into the numbers later. Let me introduce them to you. Now, of course, on my right, you have the original Hamlet, the original Macbeth, the original
Titus Andronicus.
Titus Andronicus.
My other favorite roles would have been the guy on the right in the comedy.
The guy on the right in the comedy is Jess Winfield, sitting
Woo!
Right to my right. On the left, sitting next to Reed Martin, is the original Reduced Shakespeare Company props and costume goddess, Saw Winfield, right there.
Yes.
She has already explained to us she will not be on roller skates today. We are all very disappointed about that. And sitting here in the middle, in the place of honor, in the center where he should be, the man whose idea it all was to begin with, Daniel Singer, the founder of the Reduced Shakespeare Company.
Hey, everybody.
Huzzah. We are here on the beautiful balcony of the Stone Tree Golf Course.
Stone Tree, I think, Elizabethan Golf Course.
The Stone Tree Elizabethan Golf Course here in Nevada, California. Nevada, California. The site, or very near the site, of the very first performance. Can you guys, Jess, Daniel, Saw, explain to us where we are? What sort of hallowed ground we're sitting on?
Well, 30 years ago today,
Sergeant Pepper, yes.
The very first performance of the Reduced Shakespeare Company in front of any audience took place just a few feet from here. So this is the site of the Northern California Renaissance Fair. Right now there's a beautiful golf course, several McMansions dotting the hillsides, but this was the site of the Northern Renaissance Fair for, I'm guessing, around 25 years, from the 70s through the 80s and into the early 90s. So the Reduced Shakespeare Company started here its very first performance in 1981, 30 years ago today.
Wow.
Now, that original performance was Hamlet, being done as a half an hour long show, and the original cast was myself and Jess and two other people who aren't here today because we forgot to invite them. But if you're listening, Barbara Reinertsen and Michael Fleming. Hi, Barbara.
Here's to Barbara. Here's to Michael.
Barbara, I friended you on Facebook and you haven't responded yet.
Please, Barbara, what's up?
That
Come
is
on.
So like Barbara.
So the story about the evolution of the cast on that of that first team that did Hamlet is kind of famous, but Barbara took a famous tumble on about the second weekend of the fair and broke her ankle and couldn't go on. Or actually, she could go on, but it was in a lot of pain, and it just didn't really suit the character of Ophelia and Gertrude.
We leave giving pain to the audience, yeah, usually.
Until later when it did.
Yeah, we did. Drowned her. We drowned and killed them both, but anyway.
So that's when Adam Long, who had auditioned for the original company, but wasn't quite what I was looking for at the time, stepped into Barbara's roles on the third weekend of performances, so later in August 1981. Adam assumed the roles of Ophelia and Gertrude, and the rest is history. But what was funny about Barbara Reinertsen was that, God bless her, a delightful woman and a wonderful actress, and once Adam took over her roles, the show sort of moved on, and Barbara insisted with her leg in a cast up to her hip on going back on stage, darn it, to make sure that Adam didn't completely usurp her role. And so for the rest of the run, we had dueling Ophelias. Adam would do some shows, and Barbara would do others. And it was a delightful chaos of a nightmare.
Barbara, mind you, actually going around on stage on crutches with her foot extended, the trooper that she was.
And how did she do the flip onto her back crutches and everything?
But that's even before Anthony Scher did his famous Richard III on crutches. So she was really very much ahead of her time.
Yeah. Indeed, yes. Indeed.
Mm-hmm. See, that's that other... other RSC.
Austin, I always thought you did the pedant so well. I mean, I always loved doing Hamlet, but I thought you out pedanted even.
But this is an interesting conversation because I'm interested in the differences between our two Hamlets. We're jumping out of any sort of.
Oh, just go there. We have 2 hours.
We have 2 hours to kill. What? Now, how did you, when you were performing Hamlet, or when you were performing? When you were playing Jess in the Complete Works of William Shakespeare, how did
I think you were the definitive Jess.
Oh, thank you.
Yes, very much so.
Critics didn't think so.
He was better as himself last week.
Well, obviously, the Jess character in the show is just an expanded on-stage version of what I'm like. I brought all of my quirks and peccadillos and freakishness to the role. Hamlet is a very interesting question. I was hoping you'd ask that because when Daniel first cast his four-person version of Hamlet, I think he sort of knew it was going to be a comedy, but didn't know the extent to which it was going to be one. So when all of a sudden I'm cast as Hamlet, and I had done Tom Stoppard's 15-minute Hamlet at Berkeley,
which I see
about 6 months before. Yeah, I actually have some photos of that.
Oh, great!
I have a bunch of photos of all y'all when some of you had hair.
I still do.
And but so
TMI.
I didn't necessarily know that it was a comedy. So I spent a week before going, okay, how am I going to play Hamlet in this role? And I went with the idea, the question is he mad or is he pretending to be mad? And I sort of went with the, he's pretending to be mad, and in doing so, he goes mad. Oh. So he's not actually aware of his own madness. He thinks he's pretending when in
fact, he had his madness and ate it too.
Which basically meant that I was just over the top all the time and pulling my hair out and screaming and pulling at my beard and.
Well, can I just interject that the subtlety of character is kind of lost at the Renaissance Fair, where you just have to be louder. Yeah, I'm sure as a director I was saying, that's great, Jess, but just louder.
We can't hear you. Well, when you guys asked me to join the company in 92, I said I was thrilled and excited, but I said I can't do it the way Jess did it and does it. And because I as you said, it was the way you played it was an exaggeration of who you were. So I think that's all I could do was exaggerate who I was. And so, yes, I did bring the pedantry. And the kind
bring
of
in the pen.
The sort of smarmy failed talk show game show host that I was and could have been. I always saw my Hamlet as sort of Fraser Crane wannabe in over his head.
Right.
And thankfully, I never played the Renaissance Fair, so I never had to be louder.
Which, and that makes a big difference because there were certain things that we started. You'd be surprised watching, if you watched a performance of, even after we'd just been doing Hamlet for a year or so at the Renaissance Fair, how much that particular part of the show, if you take away the audience participation section, is still the same. I mean, it's the same blocking, it's the same, but because we'd been doing it for so long, I couldn't necessarily change that when we got into a 99-seat equity waiver house after having been doing it with clanging bells and parades going by. It wasn't really possible to change it all the way. So, in a way, you got to go at it from a fresher perspective.
I did, yes. Yeah, you guys did all the heavy lifting at the Renaissance Fair. I feel like I came in late. So 30 years ago today, what was that first performance of Hamlet like? How similar is it to the Hamlet we now know in the complete works of William Shakespeare, abridged, revised, or unrevised?
As Jeff just mentioned, the show in terms of the way it's staged has changed, you know, almost not at all.
Okay.
Even from the very first performance.
Well, you know, the script did not have any comical suggestions in it at all. You know, it was just, here's how to do Hamlet as the essential story in a very short amount of time. And during the 3 weeks or so that we rehearsed before the fair opened, we were just naturally kind of applying ourselves to, okay, let's exaggerate, let's be cartoony, let's just make everything really, really obvious. So we were acting it rehearsing it as if we were in a melodrama. So that's how we hit the stage on opening day, was just kind of exaggerating what was naturally exaggeratable about our parts. So our stage originally was called the Inn Yard Stage, and it was located kind of at the center of the Renaissance Fair, right next to where the fair had kind of a big field office. So the entertainment office and the prop room and everything was right next to our stage. And there was kind of a funky old building where some of the people who were working the fair were kind of had like a little loft office where they could peek out and look down on the stage. And from the stage, you could look up and see them. And we noticed during those first couple of weekends that they would all just sit and watch the show, which we were kind of amazed at. Like, don't they have work to do? What are they watching this for? And we were getting roars of laughter and standing ovations and just a lot of attention for our show. And then we kind of realized that within a couple of weeks that we had become, quickly in our earliest days, we had gone from, you know, little screaming people on a platform to a hit in our very first year.
Let me answer one quick thing, though, about the main difference in the script at that point was what it was, was written for four people. There was Barbara playing the roles of Ophelia and Gertrude, Daniel doing Polonius and Laertes and Horatio, and me doing Hamlet. And we had our first Claudius was Michael Fleming. Now, we sort of, our Claudiuses were the drummer in Spinal Tap. We went through one pretty much every season. Yeah. First it was Michael Fleming, who didn't know he was funny, but he had the ears and a crown that fit them just so.
Yeah, the crown was just a little too big, so it slid right onto his ears.
Well, that's a trick you still use.
And I don't know that I knew that he did that.
Yeah.
That's how it sat on my head.
Oh, the providence of the show.
Hi, I'm Dick Costolo from Twitter, and you're listening to the Reduced Shakespeare Company podcast.
So now, didn't you guys have to gather a crowd? I came in, I worked, I think, the last Renaissance Fair the company worked. The Southern Fair had moved out.
San Bernardino.
Yeah. And there was a whole sort of spiel about gathering the crowd. Is that something you did in the first year, or is that something?
Oh, sure.
Oh yeah. You know, in those half an hour slots of time, a show is 25 minutes long, and then the audience gets up and goes away right before you start.
Right.
So yeah, you go out in the street, you talk people into sitting down, and it becomes part of your shtick.
Saw, were you working at that first summer?
I worked at the fair.
Did you? When did you get involved with costumes and props for the RSC?
When they first needed, when we were going to do the show for the very first time, the whole show.
Complete Works.
The Complete Works show, okay. Getting ready to go to Edinburgh. Like, oh, we need some stuff. We need some clothes. We need some things. Can you make us some stuff? I'm like, yeah. So I made some costumes. We made some props. Like, what are we going to use? And they didn't know what they were going to even do, really. It was really fly by the seat of your pants.
But you had costumes on the first day.
Well, here's the thing. We've been doing our shows at the fair for several years.
Yeah.
And that was started in 81. In 87, we planned Complete Works. So we got sort of our basic shabby stuff.
We borrowed them from the fair.
From the costume department. And then saw, we made this whole list of things that we needed to sort of fill in the blanks.
Yeah, and we had to turn things into quick change, too, because that didn't happen before, because Adam didn't need to get in and out of a bodice a few times.
Right. So you decided you wanted to do a short version of Hamlet.
Right.
Had every number of questions together. How did you hold auditions? How did you announce them? Where did you find the people to audition? And had all of them performed at the fair before? How did you know these people? Sort of that whole story.
Right. So let's see. So 1981, the company that did the Renaissance Fairs, known as the Living History Center back then, held its events in Southern California in the spring, Northern California in the fall. And I had planned to do it in the spring of 1981. So I went down to that fair, and I didn't quite have the support that I needed to really put the company together at that time. Because I had just sort of gotten into working at Living History Center events, and it was just a little too soon. But by the time it was summer of 81 and the fair was being planned for here, we had all of our ducks in a row, and I simply announced and held open auditions at the fair rehearsals. So on the first weekend of fair rehearsals, which I think is 4 weekends before opening, there was just an announcement. Hey, anybody who wants to be in Hamlet, come to auditions at 3 o'clock this afternoon. That's all it was. I didn't know these guys. I didn't know anybody. I had no idea who was going to be in my show. I was just taking my chances.
And what did you have them do? Do you remember?
You just had us read the script. You just put 4 people on stage at a time and said go.
So you had done a cutting of Hamlet.
Right, my script was all ready.
Yeah.
I'd gotten it ready for spring, and so it had just been sitting there collecting dust. So the people who came to auditions probably had done fairs before, but weren't necessarily like professional actors or have a 3-minute monologue from Shakespeare. I just had people read from the script. And honestly, I didn't know what I was going to get, so I was going to be happy with whatever I got. You know, one of the luckiest things was that Jess had just done 15-minute Hamlet. So, I just crossed Hamlet off the list. Okay, I got Jess.
I got my Hamlet.
Now, I got to get serious here. And also, I had actually known Barbara Reinertsen for a couple of years. I'd seen her in other fair shows, and I thought, she'd probably make a really good Ophelia and Gertrude. She can play both the silly young girl and the matronly queen. And so I had sort of pre-cast her in my mind. So that was kind of a slam dunk. And I was just really looking then for one more person to be a sort of a male heavy who would be a good Claudius. And in the dual role of his own brother, the ghost of Hamlet's father. And really, Michael Fleming, who showed up, was the only person who was even close. He got the job, and like just said, he was just accidentally comical and turned out to be perfect.
Right.
That's a great title for his autobiography, too. Accidentally comical.
But that day at open auditions, if Jess hadn't shown up, and Adam had auditioned that day as well, but since he wasn't quite what I was looking for Claudius, I passed him by, and then 3 weeks later he was in the show.
Right.
I don't want to interrupt the flow of what you're saying, but we did have our first question.
Please. From
Computer 821. We also know him as Double A.
Hey, Double A.
The burning question he wants to know is, who thought of rhyming Othello with Jello?
Oh,
that was me. That was me.
Bravo! Well done. Well done, sir.
Although in the new revised edition, it's actually rhymed with limoncello. I don't know if you see that.
Well, that's very good point. He has a follow up question. He says, "Which would you guys consider to be the definitive version of the complete works script? The original script, the BBC radio show? No, not that. The PBS performance, etc. The newly revised edition? What say you?"
No, there's no answer because there is no definitive. It's one of those moving target scripts that, depending on who you are, what period of time you're looking at, because we would have said, the published edition from 20 years ago is the definitive, but we wouldn't say that now.
Well, and if you're talking about definitive text, that's very different from definitive performance or production.
Right.
The definitive text is whatever works tonight.
Whatever works tonight for you.
Well, people ask that about all of our shows. When do you stop working on them?
Yeah.
Never. So it keeps. Yeah, it just keeps changing.
Well, and you talked about you had written the original script. You were casting your people. How much changed in rehearsal or performance? Constantly, or?
Well, what's interesting is that the Shakespearean part of the script really remained intact, and except for several judicious cuts, has remained so ever since.
Yeah, okay. Hamlet, Titus Andronicus, Romeo and Juliet, Macbeth, you know, Rapatello, that stuff doesn't really change. Right. So the interstitial bit is
What has been enhanced are the humorous interjections.
Yeah,
that all evolves on a constant basis.
I want to go back quickly to answer about Othello because it's an interesting story. It's one of the things that was added into the script very much later on, right before we rejoined the troupe. Really, it was in '89 or so. We used to just do the Hamlet or Othello the Moor, Adam would stab himself with boats, and it's like, well, Adam's really stupid. And on we go to the comedies.
Yeah.
And we were performing in Hawaii, and one night in a hotel room, Adam and I partook of the local gardening
herb
clippings.
Clippings. Yeah. And we came up with Othello in the hotel room that night and performed it for Sa and Daniel on the beach at Waikiki the next morning, and
put got it in a thumbs up from both of us. And
so that's not an urban myth. This actually happened.
Yeah.
Now I have to say, for what it's worth, among our chatters here in the chat, UStream chat stream, Jell-O is preferred over limoncello.
Have you ever had limoncello?
That's it for this week's Reduced Shakespeare Company podcast, or at least that would be it. But this was a 2-hour-long webcast I'm trying to reduce here, and we're just about to start talking about the very first Reduced Shakespeare Company performance of Romeo and Juliet. So, with your indulgence, this will be a slightly longer episode of the Reduced Shakespeare Company podcast.
Now, when did Romeo and Juliet, tell me the story of Romeo, because it was only Hamlet to start.
Sure. So let's see. So autumn 82, we're back up here with South African actor Errol Ross as our Claudius.
Wow.
Errol, if you're still around out there somewhere, he was always kind of perplexed as a member of the Reduced Shakespeare Company. He had been from his native country, South Africa. He was like an award-winning dramatic actor and found himself in California at the Renaissance Fair doing a parody of Shakespeare, not quite comfortable with it. One of the funny things about having somebody serious in the show is that it makes you much funnier when there's like the guy in the...
If only by comparison.
Or by comparison.
Yeah. Yes. Yeah.
Just to point out also, we also did Midsummer Night's Dream that year. Very few people know we did a 20-minute Midsummer Night's Dream with Errol.
Midsummer Night's Nap, or what did you call it?
You know,
it wasn't really a parody. It was just a short version of a play. And it was totally charming. It's really nice. Adam played Puck. And Barbara Reinertsen and Marilyn Letchworth played the two female lovers. Jess and I were the male guys, and Errol Ross was Oberon.
And that was when we discovered that the comedies aren't half as funny as the tragedy. We did Midsummer Night's Dream. It was fine. It was fun. But people were like, yeah, I liked it when Hamlet was funnier.
Were you called Reduced Shakespeare Company from the very beginning?
From the very start.
And who thought it up?
I came in one day with a list of proposed names. And one of them was
this
like...
This is during the 3 weeks of rehearsal.
Yeah. Okay. Condensed cream of Shakespeare soup was one of them.
Owl strangling time. Sorry, that's Monty Python. Excuse me.
That was great. Thank you, Monty Python.
Yeah.
Reduced Shakespeare Company was one of them, and the reason that I liked it was because when I was a drama student in London, I was such a fan of the Royal Shakespeare Company.
Yeah, yeah.
I had a little t-shirt that said RSC on it, and I thought that giving them the compliment, as it seemed at the time, of sharing the same initials was a good idea, and everybody loved Reduced Shakespeare Company.
At one point, perfect. Didn't you do something called Lucinda Wood Nymph of the Glade with the abbreviated ballet theater or something?
Yes, we did.
And this was...
It's posted on YouTube, I think.
Yeah, that is on YouTube.
What year would this
have
been?
Well, let's see, that was probably 88.
Oh, so this was several years
that
later.
That was after
last
Saw
year
was okay. well integrated into okay. the into yeah. the process.
So,
but to get back to the question,
yes.
After I had to go graduate from Berkeley, where Reed and Austin and I were classmates, and one year I could not go down and do Southern
Fair. So that was 1983.
Right.
So the third year.
Okay. So the company went from 3 people to 2 people. It was just Adam and myself. And so I suggested we do a short Macbeth, and he suggested a short Romeo and Juliet, and so we kind of had a contest. His Romeo and Juliet was way funnier than my Macbeth. So we rehearsed it and did it, and so that was the launch of our two-man show.
And a lot of people may not know this, but it was a two-hander.
That's right.
So you were narrator as well as Romeo. Correct.
Right.
Yeah.
Yes, I did a little.
I did it that way.
I did a little spin
Oregon Country Fair,
when I changed characters from Romeo to narrator. I spun in place. It was very complicated.
Can you demonstrate that for us?
No. I could try, but I would hurt myself.
Yes.
And so how many years were you away? One summer, two summers?
I think I didn't come back until 86. I graduated from Berkeley. I was doing theater up here in the Bay Area. And then in the summer of, or the fall, spring of 1987, Adam and Daniel called and said, hey, we want to do Hamlet at the fair. I was out of college by this point, and they had gotten this idea to do the complete works from a friend of ours, and he said, can you come down? We'll do Romeo and Juliet and Hamlet in repertory at Southern Renaissance Fair, and we'll work on a full-length show while I'm there, to which I said... That sounds like a great plan.
And that was 86. And that was when we became a pass the hat act, which dramatically changed our style. Because when you're getting paid $40 a day by the Renaissance Fair to do your act, there's only so much effort you put into it. Because it's hard work. You're dragging your costumes from stage to stage. But after we talked to the jugglers who were passing the hat after their shows and making way more money than we were, we decided to not only become a pass-the-hat act, but to integrate all the sort of comedy stylings into the show to get the audience really excited about the way the show progressed toward its climax so that they would just be whipping out money at the end.
Right. And if we do it backwards, you'll give us money, won't ya?
Although this seems like it was just motivated by greed, which is partially true, it actually made the show much funnier.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
We really upped our game. And it.
So were you not doing it faster and backwards before then?
We did do an encore.
Okay.
Yes. One of the things that's important to understand is that the Reduced Shakespeare Company was just a hobby for a long time. You know, Jess was away for a couple of years, but Adam and I were both distracted by day jobs and other things, and it really wasn't until 86 when we became a pass the hat act and started making some money to live on that we actually said, you know, let's just do this theater thing because we've got something good going here. So now that we were a three-man company, we were just looking for more opportunities. We were thinking of booking ourselves at other Renaissance fairs that happened at different times during the year and thinking, okay, let's just make a job out of this.
Okay.
And out of this came, oh, you guys should go to the Edinburgh Festival. And we were like, what's the Edinburgh Festival? And what is Edinburgh?
We booked a theater in Edinburgh. Actually, Daniel did, because he was the ostensible company manager at the time, under the title, The Complete Works of William Shakespeare Abridged by the Reduced Shakespeare Company. Now, what we knew we had was Hamlet and Romeo and Juliet. We had none of the other 35 plays. So we said, how are we going to tackle this? We split them up. Daniel took the histories, I believe. I took the tragedies, and Adam took the comedies. And we wrote we figured out, okay, we have 40 minutes. We have the stage for 60 minutes. That gives us 40 minutes, divide 35 by 4, 2 minutes per play. So we wrote little two-minute sketches of each and every play. And that stack survives somewhere.
Yeah.
But we got together.
But I got to say, the opposite side of that is we could say, okay, our Hamlet is about 22 minutes long. Our Romeo and Juliet is about 18 minutes long. That's 40 minutes. So if we're going to do the complete works in an hour, we have to do 35 plays in 20 minutes.
Right. How tough could that be?
It's just math, right?
It's just math. I was told there'd be no math.
Yeah, I know. That's why we're English theater students. So we got together and we read through that entire stack of stuff, and it was boring as hell, especially when we got to the comedies. So the first thing we said was, right, we got to figure out something entirely else to do
better
with the comedies.
So
we sat there, like, listening to ourselves going, God, well, these comedies are all alike. I mean, what if we combine them down to one? We're like, hey, that's a good line. We should put that in the script. And we sort of made it almost more about the process, which is what the show is, of three guys trying to do the complete works of William Shakespeare, because that's what we were trying to do. We'd already promised it to someone, and the material that we had written wasn't working,
right.
with the exception of a couple of pieces. Titus Andronicus we read and went, oh, that's funny. We'll keep that. Macbeth was funny, and we'll keep that. And the rest came about sort of in the process of the three of us sitting around in a room figuring out what worked and what didn't. And we had no idea if it would work until we premiered it at the Paramount Ranch in 1987, one night after, it was a week after the run of the fair, I think.
It was in June, I think.
At any point, where did you guys go, I don't know what this could be, let's just get out there and perform it and see what happens and improvise?
Well, the one performance that we had at Paramount Ranch as a premiere, it was hard to tell if it was a success or not because it was completely attended by fans who screamed with approval at every little stupid thing we did.
Right.
So that was kind of hard to tell. And the comedies as performed that for that performance was not the version we ended up doing at Edinburgh, because I remember when we finally landed at Edinburgh, we completely rewrote it.
Yeah.
So we weren't sure at all.
Right.
And what we had learned from the process, though, was that by grouping all the comedies together in one lump and grouping all the histories together in one lump really allowed us some time to play with the tragedies, which was all where all the comic material comes from.
Right. And by the way, I went back and looked at the original version of the comedies that we did, and it's not bad.
It's not bad.
We have spent a lot of time rewriting the comedies and trying to fix them, and there's a new version in the Complete Works Revised. I went back and looked at the original, and I'm like, that's fine!
I kind of remember.
Who cares? Throw it. Move on.
I think it exists on videotape, because I think I've seen it. And so the concept was that there were these props that sort of, they were symbolic. They represented the things that happen in comedies, and we juggled them as kind of representing of the way Shakespeare kind of juggled all those plot devices. It was kind of clever.
It was like, yeah, there's a crown and a wig, and you're wearing the crown, and he's wearing the wig, and there's a sword, and I will put it on. I'll put it on YouTube sometime in the next few weeks.
That's really it for this week's Reduced Shakespeare Company podcast. We still have over an hour left of conversation plus questions and answers from fans, which I will edit down for next week's episode, 30th Anniversary Webcast Part 2. If you want to see some of the clips we talk about of the early Reduced Shakespeare Company performances, you can find some at our YouTube channel, or just go onto YouTube and search for Reduced Shakespeare Company Vintage. Then send us your theatrical origin stories via email to feedback@reducedshakespeare.com. You can also post comments on our website podcast page, and you can post reviews on iTunes. You can interact with other fans at our website and our Reduced Shakespeare Company Facebook fan page. You can also become a subscriber to our YouTube channel or become a Twit. Follow us on Twitter @Reduced. You can find easy links to all these social networks at our website, reducedshakespeare.com. Thanks, as always, to webmaster Matt Rippey, unoriginal Lady Anne Matthew Croak, music by John Weber and Garage Band. Our random fan shout-out this week goes to Greg Porter, who's listening to this on his iDiet. No reason, it's just random. Special thanks to Dick Costolo, the CEO of Twitter, and to Jess Daniel and Sa for making this webcast happen. And thanks very much to you for listening. I'm Austin Titchener, 245 735th of the Reduced Shakespeare Company.
Getting a few thoughts on Twitter. H.E. Sherman says, if a microphone could be handed around, this would sound much better.
Ah.
All right, good note for next time.
This podcast is a production of the Reduced Shakespeare Company, reducing expectations since 1981. Go to reducedshakespeare.com for performance dates, actor bios, email newsletters, and so much less.
So much less.